It is A230064, Minnesota Internship Center versus Department of Education. Council, you're familiar with our proceedings. You can have a seat, Council. Each of you will have 15 minutes for your primary argument. The appellant has an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal, if you choose to use it. These matters are being recorded. No other recordings are permitted. Please identify yourself and your client before you begin speaking. I think that's it. Council, whenever you're ready.
May it please the court, Jack Perry on behalf of the petitioner or appellant, Minnick, or Minnick is how we usually refer to them. And I'm going to address four different errors, and I must confess when we begin is I have been fighting for and against governments for 33 years now, and I really have not seen a situation where there is such a clear government overstep and overreach. And I begin this with the jurisdictional issue. And the jurisdictional issue is not something that the Department of Education shouldn't have been aware of. In 2016, ALJ Jim Mortensen addressed a case handled also by my office, not by me, addressed the same issue of the difference between...
It wasn't really the same issue, was it?
It was, you're correct. It wasn't the same issue, but he got to the same issue, and he specifically said that you were entitled to notice under 42. And in this case, the first error is jurisdiction. And as this court knows, jurisdiction is an issue that cannot be waived, and the Supreme Court ruled in 48, lack of statutory power betokens lack of jurisdiction. And in this case, our contention is that the only way the MDE could proceed against Minnick was under 42. And the reason we say that is if you look at .42, subdivision 2, and subdivisions 4 through 6, you will see that if there is a violation of law...
They're not alleging it. They weren't investigating a violation of law. They were investigating whether they didn't know if there was a violation of law. It wasn't even part of their consideration.
I don't think that's demonstrably true, Your Honor. Is under subdivision or .42 subdivision 2, it says violations of law within the district or school district, that is, and subdivisions are a paren 7 close paren is the operative language. Using funds contrary to statutory purpose, end of quote. And they say in the record at 513 that the actions taken by Minnick were, quote, done for a financial benefit, end of quotation. That's their finding. That's why they initiated this investigation. And there is no way that
Has to do with the use of funds, and the other, I think what the investigation was concerned with was, are the number of students enrolled in the school, is that an accurate number?
Yes, but they said their own words.
And the number of students that are enrolled at the school is determinative of how money is allocated.
That's right.
Not how money is used, but how money is allocated, right? Okay. Is that wrong?
That's the defense that MDA says, but that's not their own language, internal. They said they started this investigation because what was done for financial benefit of Minnick. That is how you use. What's that?
They received a complaint alleging that, correct?
That's right. Okay. That's right. And that's why they initiated it.
Let's, even assuming that .42 applies, help me understand why MDE couldn't conduct an audit. In other words, I don't see any language that when there is an allegation of fraud in terms of attendance record keeping, that MDE cannot conduct an audit under 0.41 and must proceed under 0.42. They're separate statutory provisions, and nothing in 0.41 limits their authority to certain situations.
Here's what the statute says. The statute says that if you have one of those violations that we just went through, and I submit to you that the (7) violation is there in spades, in their own words. And if that's true, then subdivision 4, subdivision 5, and subdivision 6, they use the word shall, and must. And under 645.44, subdivision 16 and 15A, those words mean mandatory. And that requires, Your Honor, that once you find that violation,
this is the due process. The violation is occurring, and what they were looking into was in the past, correct?
That would always be the case. They're doing an investigation as to the
improper about the notice to the board, subdivision 4, when it appears that a violation is occurring in a district. So I'm not sure your argument based on the language is applicable to a situation where they're auditing a prior year's records.
That can't be the case because we still have the money. We have the financial benefit, which is why they clawed back that money, Your Honor.
Well,
it says
any event,
using funds
I
contrary.
I think you've answered my question as to why they can't proceed under 0.41.
I'll give you two answers. First is that the mandatory language under 42 subdivisions 4, 5, and 6 cannot be ignored. Once you find a violation, and I don't think you can ignore their language, once you find it, then we are entitled to notice, the opportunity to cure, and then a hearing. And the record is clear, we didn't get any of those things. As to the second argument for it, which is even stronger.
Did you really not get any of those things? I mean, it wasn't a mystery what they were investigating. You were cooperating for 2 years during this audit. And there was never an objection that I could see in the record to producing records and showing up for interviews and producing more records. I'm just wondering if what happened here in the context of the audit is any different than what you would have received, the due process guarantees that you're claiming that you're entitled to.
Great question. One, this is where the Supreme Court's rules about you can't waive jurisdiction applies. That's a technical argument. The practical argument is we see in this record that the new folks who are here, they didn't say, oh, we didn't do anything wrong. They went through and said, oh, here's what we did wrong. It's not 1.3 million. It's we owe you 10,000. We offered that. We've continued to offer that in front of this court. That's what Subdivision 5 provides for, is the opportunity for us to cure the defect. And an actual hearing. Here, there's a hearing, an appellate hearing. The way it's interpreted by the MDE, the appellate hearing that we're entitled to under 41 is to argue legal matters. We submitted a whole bunch of factual stuff, all of which was excluded. They said, no, we don't get to hear testimony, we're going to submit it. You get to appeal the record that was created in front of the audit committee, period. And they didn't even produce what was we supposedly admitted to, Your Honor, in the audit. They said that man back there admitted certain things, but they didn't give us, there was no oral transcript. They said they have, in their own notes, they say there was notes taken to support that. We never got that. We did a DPA request, we did everything, it's not in the record. We have no basis, and then, to make it worse, Your Honor, despite the fact that we couldn't submit anything and they excluded it all, they said, hey, we're changing what he admitted to. So we see they ultimately change and say, well, we acknowledge you didn't really say this, you said this. Well, there's no basis for it. But if I can get back to Judge Cochran, you asked a question, there's two answers to it, is why does not 41? Why not 41 is the law of the case. The law of the case, according to Chief Judge's order, is that if it's not specifically in the statute, which is under 124E03 subdivision 1, then it's not applicable. And that's why when we asked to be exempt from the bonding requirement, This court said, no, you're not exempt because it's not specifically in 574.18. And that's right. We weren't specific. The same thing is true of 41. And the irony is that
there is a statute that makes charter schools subject to the same audit requirements as districts.
No, that's under 124E.16, which requires, and the guy back here, where did he go? This guy, he's one of the pioneers of this, is that's the annual audits that we do. That's the obligation that the charter schools have. What 41 is about.
I don't read it that way. When I look at 124E16, subdivision 2 talks about a charter school must publish an annual report, but subdivision 1 is different. A charter school is subject to the same financial audits, audit procedures, and audit requirements as a district. That would be what the department does. So I think that the way I read the statute is that it's twofold. And when I look at the website, which you directed us to in your brief, it appears that the school is in compliance with publishing its annual report. And so it begs the question, why wouldn't Subdivision 1 apply to the school just as the school acknowledges that Subdivision 2 applies to it?
Because 41 is all about errors and disparities in number. It's for the routine. You have five students rather than four students or this or that. It is not what we have here, a $1.3 million clawback, which there's nothing like this. They admit that. There is nothing ever happened like this. And so they want to apply a normal audit procedure for annual audits to this.
So is it your position that a charter school is never subject to an audit?
Just like the bond exemption, same thing. Just like there's about five or six other cases from this court that says if it's not specifically in there, it's not subject to it.
Well, then how do we reconcile that position with subdivision 1 of 124E16, which provides for audits, like a district?
And that is the review of our annual audits. It's not for an investigation for violations, which is what we have here. We have two different statutes.
You say it's the review of your annual audits. Review by whom?
MD. Or the school authorizer, too, Your Honor.
What about the language in 120E.16 that says the commissioner, state auditor, legislative auditor, or authorizer may conduct financial program or compliance audits? Wouldn't that, when read in conjunction with the first sentence, a charter school is subject to the same financial audits, audit procedures, and audit requirements as a district, except as provided under the subdivision, don't those two sentences together mean that a charter school is subject to the same audit requirements as 127A.41?
I don't think so, Your Honor. And I'm going to make one comment, then go back to my first argument, is that if you look at 124E.25, it specifically refers to 0.42. So the legislature knew how to refer to this review. It doesn't do that for 4.1. But
so
the
how,
bigger
how,
argument...
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm
go
sorry.
Ahead.
The bigger argument is 4.2 is... set up
before
due process for this.
Before you get to 4.2, I just am concerned that when you construe 0.16 subdivision 1 in the way that you're construing it, it's reading out some of the language that the legislature included. For example, the last one, if the audit report finds that a material weakness exists in the financial reporting systems of a charter school, systems, not the annual report, but systems, the charter school must submit a written report to the commissioner explaining how it will resolve the material weakness. So there's more there than just let's look at the annual report.
And let's say you're right, Your Honor. Is our stronger argument is the fact that 42 applies and the legislature said to the agency, if you find these violations, you are mandated to give a notice.
Okay, let's go back to that point because you cited us to page 513 of the record to suggest that the agency had found a violation that falls within 0.42. And you said, you quoted some language that the actions were for financial benefit. And I have the page that you cited us to up on my computer, and I'm not seeing that. I want to know exactly what language from what document you're relying on to say that the agency found a violation that falls within 0.42.
What I said was that they said that what we did was done for financial benefit.
Point me to the language in the document. That's what
I don't have 513 in front of me.
What document you are relying on, because I'm having trouble finding it, and I can't go back, you know, tomorrow when I go back and I'm looking at this in, or later today in a lot more detail, I want to be able to know exactly what you're referring to, because your argument hinges on this.
Well,
the 0.42 argument hinges on this. So tell me exactly what you're referring to.
I'm going to quote you the language. It's in our brief, and this is citation to it, and I'll look for it for the reply, and I'll see if I can
find that.
I do not believe that my argument hinges on the fact that they make an admission on this. The entire audit premise was that our client...
The entire audit premise was based on a complaint. I don't recall any finding by them that there was fraud by the school itself.
Your Honor, if I can answer.
Of course.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yes.
With all due respect, when you claw back $1.3 million and from a school because the school has allegedly misstated the ADMs, the number of adjusted daily membership, there is no way I believe anyone can conclude otherwise than that's something improper, and to use the language of 7, using funds contrary to statutory purpose, because we use those monies, they're clawing them back, we still have those monies until they're clawed back. With all due respect, Your Honor, I don't know how one gets there without torturing common sense, and there's also the Minnesota Transitions case in the federal court that took these same exact allegations, and they connected the dots, and that's in our brief, but there's no subtlety here.
So I'll wait till...
You go ahead.
So let's assume there was a fraud finding, and your argument is then that the school, that the department had to proceed under 0.42 and couldn't proceed under 0.41. Financially, can the department, if there was fraud, then the school received funds that it shouldn't have received.
Correct.
Do you agree with that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. That's why we offered $710,000 back.
Would you agree that the legislature wants accountability from schools, including charter schools?
No question.
So then under 0.42, is the agency able to recoup funds that if the school got more than it should have under if the correct ADM had been used as opposed to an incorrect ADM, under 0.42, doesn't the school end up having a less severe financial consequence than under 0.41?
I believe. I can answer.
Yes,
okay,
of course.
I'm sorry.
Of course.
Your Honor, the only difference, I believe, between 0.41 and 0.42, the wrongdoing is the wrongdoing. The only issue is that 0.41, as applied here, provides no due process. And if you're clawing back $1.3 million, there should be due process. And I believe that 0.42 requires the due process. And frankly, it's Judge Frisch's comment. Did I say that right, Frisch?
Yes, you did.
Okay, I'm sorry. It's your question before is what would have happened different? Well, we would have done exactly what we did, which is here. We're not innocent. The new team recognized that and said, here's $710,000. We're still saying that right now today. And that's the difference, Judge Cochran, is I think the legislature was aware that you have to give due process when you have serious things. And it's not just 7. I think like 5 or so is discrimination. And in fact, they even said you have to have rules. The department has to create rules for if you're going to accuse someone of violations of discrimination. These are serious, it's serious wrongdoing, and that requires more than an audit that we can't do anything about. We can't even see it.
What due process, what protected interest does the school have in these funds?
It provided education for ADM equivalent to 610 or 600 and some thousand of this 1.3 million. We provided that service, and it's almost like an unjust enrichment. We gave that. There's no dispute, if you accept our ADM number, that we provided service to these students, and not normal students. This is a homeless, this is the hardest students around. Not that we're looking for empathy, but they're doing God's work as far as I can tell. And they provided those service, and now we get nothing for it under the theory that, well, you don't have good records. The records were horrendous.
The school has an obligation to keep good records.
That's right. But then under the general principles of accounting, the Wybrella case where he burned his facility and so they had to estimate, there's a tax case. There's four different examples we gave where you don't just say, nah, 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 you lose because you didn't keep records, because we didn't keep records right. It's you try to figure it out, which either you do it voluntarily through a hearing process where you figure it out, or you do 0.42 and you compel that. And that's all we're looking for is due process, Your Honor. We're not trying to pretend we're innocent. We're not. We just, the numbers do not add up to 1.3 million, and they've not justified that. They're hiding behind student sign-in sheets of homeless students. It doesn't make sense to us.
The school never provided an actual count with documentation for each and every student showing who was there on which day for 2018, correct?
Here's what we did, we answered all the questions.
Because you agree that the electronic records are not accurate.
Horrible. The student records are horrible. And so once I got involved, Judge Cochran, what we did was we said, okay, the school leaders during that time period figure out what the actual numbers are, and we thought there'd be a full-blown hearing, and they cross-examined all that stuff. So we put that all together, but it was cobbled together with, and we compared the electronic records, even though they're horrible, there were some value, the student records, some value, and then we had, okay, we knew there was a whole bunch of students lost because of some, with charter schools, you can have different leaders can then take, particularly with this sort of population, you can leave with a whole bunch of students. So they knew that. So they're able to piece it together, and they put affidavits together. And that's what we submitted during the hearing, which was requested by the hearing officers. And then they said, well, no, you can't. We can't look at any of that. And so.
Well, you did submit the classroom attendance records.
We submit everything. It's just at the end of the day, they said, well, we're looking at the audit that was done and whether that was done correctly. We're not going to analyze your submissions.
Just to be clear, you never provided a spreadsheet that for each day that said, based on a review of classroom records, manual attendance records.
Couldn't. We couldn't. It's like Richard Wybrella, his case, and he's an old client, but because he, allegedly burned his facility and all the records, they couldn't do that, so they had to estimate. And that's what accounting principles require you to do. It's not just you screwed up and now we're going to punish you. It's you try to do your best, which is what we did. And what we asked for is let's have a hearing. If the MDE thinks we're wrong, then we'll have a hearing for cross-examination. But that's all we're looking for, and I think that's what the legislature is compelling. But I'm so far away my time. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. You'll have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. Maybe the longest argument that you'll ever get at the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We appreciate the stamina in the argument. Thank you. Counsel, whenever you're ready, please identify yourself before you begin speaking, and your client as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Alexander Sloan. I'm an Assistant Attorney General, and I'm here on behalf of Respondent Minnesota Department of Education. And so, may it please the Court, this case is fundamentally about what MDE and its audit team must do in an attendance audit when confronted with attendance records that were intentionally manipulated. So what the audit team and MDE did was painstakingly examine the records that did exist, go through them, take months and months to do so, and figure out what attendance was actually supported by those records. Relator argues for three untenable alternatives. The first is that charter schools simply aren't subject to audits. MDE doesn't audit them. The second is that Relator's conduct was so bad, it was overpaid by so much that it had insulated itself from attendance audits. And third is that because the records are lacking, MDE is automatically bound by Relator's own post hoc estimate.
I think that their argument really, counsel, to be fair, is that given the nature of the subject matter of the audit, it was really something that should have been investigated with all of the statutory due process protections associated with an investigation as opposed to an audit. And I think the argument is that the process that unfolded did not actually afford the school the kinds of protections that it would have otherwise received if an investigation would have occurred. It wasn't able to submit evidence. It wasn't, you know, some information was excluded. Do you want to address that essential due process claim here?
Absolutely. So the relator did submit evidence. It submitted lots of evidence. It submitted all of the records that it had. It submitted affidavits. It submitted evidence that it purported supported its estimated. But, you know, if you look at that evidence, they in their brief cite to, I think it's record 6775 through 6808, as the documents to support the estimate. If you look at those, it's a few emails and one or two memoranda with just a blanket statement. We think our ADM, or our average daily membership right now, is 550, or, you know, some number.
So, I think Judge Frisch was asking a slightly different question, though.
Oh, sure. And this is...
Go ahead.
And so, appellant or relator argues, the school argues that they had evidence that they wanted to present but were precluded from doing so, and they didn't have a full-blown contested case type hearing with the opportunity to cross-examine witnesses, that basically they were limited to the information in the initial audit, and they were allowed to submit some additional information, but today they're arguing that there was other information that was excluded or the department didn't consider. So can you address, you know, what information was not considered, and then address whether this process afforded, or the process that was provided afforded, you know, sufficient due process protections to the extent they apply?
Yes. So first, I don't think any evidence was excluded. It was just not found to be something that could support the conclusion that Relator wanted to draw. And as far as due process, you know, we had, I think Relator made three separate submissions of argument and supporting documentation, and really had, you know, the opportunity to submit anything that it could to refute the audit findings. And, you know, as...
You think that, though, that the way that the department framed what it was doing may have affected or may have impacted the type of response that the school provided? I mean, if the school knew that you were conducting an investigation vis-a-vis an audit, perhaps it would have done something different.
And this is something you're talking about at the beginning of the audit several years ago?
I mean, it was like 2 years. So,
was,
I mean, there's like
years.
A long
yeah.
time
sure, sure.
for them to maybe shift course or think about other things that it maybe should be doing, engage
sure.
in counsel, whatever it wants to do, right?
Sure. So one piece of that is I think that for practical reasons, the audits are conducted when there's an audit based on suspicion, because some of these audits are suspicionless, you know, the department is just required to conduct a certain number per year. When there's a suspicionless a suspicion-based audit, I think for practical reasons, the auditors don't go in and say, here are our allegations, now show, you know, now show us the records.
Why not?
They want to see the records unmanipulated. They want to make sure that there's not an opportunity to hide what's there. You know, the way this is supposed to work is Relator kept all the records, and if they're following the law, it should be just a matter of turning those records over, MDE going through those and figuring out whether the submitted attendance was correct.
In your view, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to turn to point 42, go ahead.
In your view, does the statute impose any limitation on the department's ability to audit a charter school?
No.
So they have unfettered discretion to conduct an audit on whatever subject they want to conduct an audit on, as long as it could conduct the same type of audit on a district?
Well, I think point 4.1 is, I believe, limited to attendance audits.
I'm talking more generally about 16.
Point 6. Well, yeah, whatever statutes the legislature enacts to allow MDE to conduct audits, the same ones would apply to charter schools. That's my view on that.
Without limitation on any subject matter that they deem appropriate.
So long as the legislature deemed it appropriate to audit a district on a given subject, 124E.16, as currently drafted, would allow Minnesota Department of Ed to conduct the same audit on a charter school.
All right, thank you. Go ahead, Judge Cochran.
Thank you. So with regard to point 4.2, just want to try and understand. Well, first of all, the school argues that the department found that there was a violation that falls within subdivision 2.7, that the school was using funds contrary to the stated purpose of the funds.
I think that means something different from what Relator argues. I think that has to do with, there are certain funds that go to a school or district's general fund, and, you know, for the school to use at its discretion. There are other funds, for example, special ed funds, English learner funds, that are based on the number of students with the particular needs. And those funds must be spent for their directed purpose. So I think what that statute is referring to is if a school were misdirecting its special education funds, for instance, to some other school activity. I think that's what that part would refer to.
Well, and then what about clause 2, noncompliance with the mandatory rule of general application promulgated by the commissioner in accordance with statute? There's rules, I presume, that require record keeping of attendance. I know there's a statute that does.
Sure. And probably on the allegation that MDE received, it might have been able to. That might have been an option for MDE to open a proceeding under point 4.2, but nothing in point 4.2 prevents it from conducting an audit of that school. And point 4.1 allows it to conduct that audit.
Was it required though to conduct an investigation under point 4.2 if it had reason to believe that there was a violation of a rule of general applicability?
I know that MDE sent a letter to, I don't have the whole record in front of me, so I don't think I have this part, but if memory serves, it was MDE sent a letter to Relator's authorizer, which is a private nonprofit organization that oversees the charter schools. And I don't know whether that was, whether they were doing that thinking that that was the opening of a point 4.2 investigation or if that was separate. But MDE opened, some manner of investigation by contacting the authorizer and saying, hey, we got these allegations. We need to get to the bottom of this.
I just have
one more question. But at the end of the day, if MDE had proceeded under point 4.2, could it have recovered funds that were, you know, erroneously paid based on an incorrect ADM? Could it have recovered that full amount?
I'm not sure. Well, I think it would need an audit to do that. I mean, it's a bit of a catch-22 because in order to figure out MDE, the allegations were that Relator was getting overpaid. And nobody disputes that. But the allegations weren't, you know, by a certain amount. MDE needed to conduct an audit to figure out the amount. And under point 4.2, I mean, I don't know if there's nothing in point 4.2 that supports an audit like that. So I think it needed to conduct an audit to figure out the amount to recover.
That sort of leads into my question. I'm wondering if what the relator is really arguing is that you can do your audit, but you can't ask for $1.3 million back without conducting the investigation, using the audit as part of the evidence in the audit findings as part of the evidence in the investigation. And that would protect the school's due process concerns. Okay. Maybe that's their argument. I'm not entirely sure. But if it is, how would you respond to that? That both things are required to get the money back.
Well, I think it's contrary to point 4.1. There's a provision in point 4.1. I know I cited this somewhere in the brief. One of the subdivisions mandates that the commissioner recover overpayments and pay underpayments found during the audit. So I think, you know, under point 4.1, just looking at that, once the commissioner or the audit team found these amounts and the commissioner upheld that, the mandatory language of point 4.1 required recovery without resort to point 4.2. And if there are no further questions, I think I will go ahead and sit down. Any further questions, Your Honors?
I have a question for you about point 1.6.
Yes.
Is the audit that was conducted here, does that fall within the type of audits that are listed in point 1.6? Is it a financial audit?
I think it's an audit or audit requirement, maybe a financial audit, but and it's one that school districts are subject to. And
so therefore, you're saying it's an audit requirement. It's a requirement that a district could be subject to an audit by MDE.
Yes. I think that language encompasses point 4.1.
Okay. And is there any so what type of situation does point 4.2 apply to typically? I mean, why wouldn't it apply here?
Well, I think point 4.2 is a tool for MDE to enforce law by withdrawing funds that would be due based on the attendance. 4.1 is separately one to just bring the money paid to the correct level based on attendance. So, you know, a lot of the things listed on point 4.1 wouldn't necessarily be something where the school is getting too much money. You know, it might be, you know, I think violating the Human Rights Act is one example on there. The problem isn't that the school has too much money.
Or having a teacher who's unlicensed.
Or having a teacher who's unlicensed, for instance. It's not something about the school getting too much money. It's about the school doing something, and it's the legislature giving MDE a tool to do something about it.
So your view is situations involving where the school received an overpayment due to inaccurate records, that is governed by point 4.1.
Yes, that would be the appropriate way to deal with that. Figure out what the correct amount is with an audit and then make the adjustment from there. I see that I'm just about at the end of
my... So how does the school... What opportunity under point 4.1 is there for the school to present its information it has as to the correct ADM?
MDE has procedures that it's required under 0.41 to promulgate an appeal of the audit findings. And so that's what happened in this case. We had an appeal. The appeal panel took any evidence that Relator wished to present and considered it and found that the audit team had reached the right result. And then, the safeguard there is that there's certiorari review by as a matter of right. It comes before this court to make sure that MDE had reached appropriate conclusions.
Anything else? All right. Thank you very much, counsel. Judge Wheelock, any questions? No questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Perry, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Well, first, it's somewhat embarrassing, Judge Frisch, that I haven't been clear with all the briefing and what our argument is, but you articulated exactly right. We are not saying they don't have the ability to audit. In fact, that's where you start.
Well, I thought you argued they didn't have the ability to audit under 0.41 in your brief. Maybe you're changing your position here today, but
it's not our strongest argument.
I think your brief did suggest that they didn't have the ability to audit under 0.41.
To be clear, there is authority to audit under 0.42. We are not saying otherwise. In fact, I think it's under subdivision 3 of 124E.25 specifically talks about that. We are simply arguing for we want due process. And as to Judge Cochran, you asked the question, and it says that, it's Appellate Appendix F, and it's page 24 of Appellate Appendix F, and it's the December 6, 2018 letter, in case our numbering's off, and it may be because how things came in.
Okay.
But it's the letter that Mr. Sloan referenced you to Larry McKenzie of Pillsbury. He's the authorizer, and it's the under one, the attendance practices, and it says in the second sentence of that first paragraph, this was done solely for financial benefit. That was the allegation that was made. That's what started this. That's my first response, Judge Cochran, to your questions. My second, as it relates to my reference to transitions, on page 9 and 10 of our reply brief, we quote from this federal case the U.S. government brought against transitions for the same thing, and they conclude the same way that was in the complaint in that document 513, or what I think is 513, and it says, the allegations in this case, this is the federal case against transitions, were, among other things, that Minnesota Transitions Charter Schools, quote, submitted fraudulent attendance and enrollment information and special education instruction reports to the state of Minnesota and to the United States Department of Education in order to receive funds to which they otherwise would not have been entitled. That's what is the situation here, is there's no sugarcoat in it. That's what was done. So based upon that, it is my contention that 42 is triggered, and 42 is a right that's given to people like us, charter schools and district schools, that have committed some sort of alleged wrongdoing, 1 through 7. And we have done that. It's the allegation. That's why they're investigating it. And in that situation, there is no ambiguity under subdivisions 4, 5, and 6. We're entitled to due process, which makes sense when you're clawing back $1.3 million so that we can make these allegations or make these defenses, which we were otherwise precluded. When the department says...
What actual defenses were you precluded from asserting? It's still unclear to me what exactly the department prevented you from saying or doing.
Well, first of all, so this letter to Larry McKenzie, December 6th, is another admission to Judge Cochran's question that they knew this was a 0.42 matter. But if they actually followed under 0.42... we would have been given the opportunity to do exactly what we did later in the process when we got involved, to say, here, we offer this amount of money to cure this. And they could say, no, that's not enough.
But,
that's
and
fine.
They have said that. No, that's not enough, right?
Well, I'm sorry.
Going to the cure piece of it, I mean, how, I'm confused by your cure argument because, I mean, isn't the cure that you give back the money that you weren't entitled to in the first place?
Exactly. That's what we offer to do. But and the question is how much.
You never provided, anything to MDE showing exactly who was there on which day.
But the argument you're making,
which an ADM could be calculated,
right.
and they did the best they could given the information that was available.
They did not. What they relied upon, they made the decision, a legal decision.
I mean, that's their position. But
they made the position that we need to rely upon electronic records, which everyone agrees, no good, and so we have to rely upon the student sign-in sheets. But that's not what the Wybrella case says. That's not what the tax court says.
Well,
that's not what Congress says.
Well, the tax court case. I mean, there's nothing in the MDE statutes that allows for an estimate. The ADM has to be based on actual student pupil counts.
Not by statute. There is nothing by statute.
Well, I would disagree, but the evidence, as I understand it, that was before MDE is the electronic attendance records, the manual sign-in sheets, and the classroom attendance records. And the school itself, when they provided the classroom attendance records, indicated that they're not reliable because not all teachers, well, I shouldn't say that. The school itself indicated that not all teachers kept classroom attendance records, that some, that they weren't kept uniformly. And for that reason, MDE concluded that they weren't reliable. So what other information would you have presented that you didn't present from which an accurate ADM could have been calculated?
Well, and this goes to your question,
yes.
Judge Frisch, is that they're together. And I'm way out of time again.
Yeah, it's fine. Go ahead.
Is you don't have to guess as to what we would submit because we did it. We submitted for the appeal committee, we submitted affidavits of the executive director, the regulatory compliance person, and I think one of the deans who pieced together and said, here's what we think the estimate is.
But so that's what you would have submitted was an estimate.
We absolutely would have done that. And the department, to answer your question, so what did we expect? Well, based upon this December 6th letter and the appeal committee made concessions and said, okay, well, we'll allow time. We scheduled it so that our people could be there to testify. We submitted testimony. We submitted information that they allowed by email and that was allowed on the July 27th hearing. They said, submit this. But then at the end of the day, they said, well, we're not going to look at any of that stuff. We're going to rely upon what's in the audit. And you don't have anything besides legal arguments against what the audit was done, which is not a hearing. It's not an evidentiary hearing where we get to present our people. There is nothing contradicting, and Judge Cochran, to understand this, so we submitted it, and we expected there to be cross-examination or whatever. We were prepared for that. There wasn't any of that. And maybe at the end of the day, they would reject everything that we submitted. But we didn't have an opportunity to do it, and so instead of losing $710,000, we lost $1.3.
So,
no opportunity.
But you haven't, I mean, that assumes that they couldn't conduct it. You haven't challenged the appeal process under 0.41 here. Your argument is that they were required to go under 0.42, correct?
Not completely, because even if you're under 4.1, the appeal, there has to be some proceeding when we get to challenge what was done in the audit committee, particularly here when at the end of the day they changed the supposed admissions we made during the audit process when they heard what we had to say, even though they said, well, we're excluding what you said, but they still changed it. But we never got a oral transcript. There was no oral recording. There was no production of the notes that were supposedly taken where Joe supposedly admitted these things, because the problem that took place was we had dutiful school administrators answering questions. because they weren't lawyered up and they didn't know what to do, they didn't volunteer anything. They just answered the question, well, what records did you have? Well, here's the records we have. And if I had been there, or any lawyer worth anything, they would have said, no. They're asking for that, but they want to know, you have to submit everything that you know about, such as the affidavits that ultimately came in. But they would have no way of knowing that because they had no lawyer, there's no due process triggered. And that's, again, and I know I've said it 1,000 times, but because I was so unclear in my briefing and oral argument, and the Judge Frisch had to clarify, and I apologize for not being clear.
You threw me off with the challenge to the audit, so.
Yeah. So,
got it clear.
I asked for it, but it's the due process, all we care about. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, counsel. The matter is submitted. Thank you very much for your submissions and your argument today. It was very helpful to the court. We will issue an opinion within the statutory time period. Thank you.
Thank you for the extra time.
Answering all of our questions.
Thank you. Nice job. Thank you.